Welcome to How I Raised It, the podcast that goes behind the scenes with entrepreneurs who've raised capital. We uncover the tips, tricks, and techniques they use to get investors to write a check. Strap in and turn it up.
Hi, and welcome to another episode of How I Raised It, produced by Foundersuite.com. Today with me is Enrico Palmerino of BotKeeper, coming to us from Boston. How are you doing today, Enrico?
Doing very well, thank you.
Enrico just finished up giving a talk to a class at Babson. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, I was brought in to do about an hour conversation on how do you identify opportunity in a market, and then what kind of metrics and data points do you track to get to like an operational bit, and how does that change as the business changes in size?
Very interesting. So let's talk on that. How did you find an opportunity? Where did the idea for BotKeeper come from? Actually, start off with what is BotKeeper, and then how did you, you know, find an opportunity and come up with this idea?
Sure. So BotKeeper is automated bookkeeping and accounting for startups and small, mid-sized businesses. The idea is that we use, rather than using like a team of bookkeepers or accountants, or, you know, hiring them in-house or using an outsourced firm, we can leverage software to do a majority of the work. And software does a great job at automating process. It's very efficient. And that means, you know, companies that use BotKeeper get more accurate data and financials. It's real time at their fingertips. And it's half the cost of using a person or outsourced firm.
Interesting. So you, how did you come up with this? Were you a bookkeeper or doing accounting or studying accounting or?
No, so the inside joke is I hate bookkeeping and accounting, which is ironic, but came up with the concept a lot to do with my first startup. So I started a lighting company that automated how you analyze, design, and manufacture LEDs. Mm. So we built software that ran a bunch of data points and variables through decision trees, and out of the bottom, it would say, this is the ideal light for this scenario, and here are the specs. Then we convert that into CAD and then manufacture it. That business ended very quickly. So I started that in my dorm room. By the time we graduated, we were doing about $8.5 million in recurring revenue. We had 60 employees and we're 46 on the Inc. 500 list. So, you know, Facebook, Twitter, 44 other companies, and then us, or 43 other companies and then us. And we ran out of cash, with all that revenue, because our books were always behind. Like we had like a 60 times 75 day close. We had very complicated accounting, deferred rev rec, depreciation schedules on assets, foreign currency conversion, inventory, manufacturing, you name it. And we just didn't know what our cash position was and over leveraged ourselves. And it really frustrated me that we had built this incredible business and that bookkeeping, or the lack of speed or the ability to keep up, almost sank it. And so that kind of prompted this idea of, well, you know, I bet I could take those same decision trees that I use for lighting, apply it to accounting, because, and actually even more easily apply it to accounting, because accounting is a bunch of policies and processes that have guidelines that need to be followed, whereas lighting has got a lot more variables and complexities and nuances. So
very interesting. And so when did you start the company?
BotKeeper in 2015. We began development. The nice thing was, like, having prior to BotKeeper, I also invested in another outsourced accounting firm and grew that one, applied some automation to it. But having that accounting background, or knowing that, and then also knowing the databasing and decision tree side of the equation, meant that our dev for BotKeeper went pretty quickly. We weren't relying on me to try to translate accounting language and speak to someone who knew tech and having them do their interpretation. I actually understood accounting well enough to be able to say, okay, in this process, this is how inventory is being dealt with. Here's a way that we could automate it. And then really architecting that out and then handing it to a dev team to build out the software. So it took us about a year to build out the beta MVP of BotKeeper, and the beta went really well. And we knew it went well when we had someone that needed like 3 years worth of cleanup come to us, and we were able to do it in about 2 weeks. Wow. And it was accurate. Like the accuracy part, it was cool that we flew through it. But then the fact that they got acquired like within a month after we gave them those numbers and the auditors didn't tear it apart, said that, okay, cool, we built something that might take off here. And normally like 3 years of bookkeeping, that would take months, maybe even a year, you know, to kind of clean up. So, and then we launched a generally available product in kind of January 2016, a much simplified, you know, certainly not what BotKeeper is today, but our first version. And that, well, we got, you know, 50, 60 clients kind of our first year, which was great. That grew to like 200 clients by our second year. You know, going into our third year, we've grown that to like 350 or 400 clients in just a matter of a couple months. So it's been really exciting.
Great. So that first, did you raise money before the general availability into launch in 2016?
No. So the previous success with the lighting business called ThinkLight, and you know, having also had a successful accounting business, or been one of the owners of it, I had some money that I was able to fund the early stages of the business. And also the founding team, like I reached out to friends and people who had seen the success of my first business and were like, yeah, let me, like, I want to do that with them. And so they came on and like, you know, kind of just blood, sweat, and tears helped me build this next company.
Interesting.
So my sister joined the founding team. A buddy who I knew for a while was there and joined as to head up our sales, Louis, and then Andy kind of came on to run the accounting and operations, and we knew each other through working at a firm early on.
Great, great. So if you're willing to share, what do you think you put into the business before you were able to get it to general availability? Just kind of, you can even give a range if that's more comfortable. What it cost
I'd
you?
I'd say like the to get the like the real MVP, right, or like the V1 of BotKeeper was probably maybe about $500,000, somewhere between a quarter and $500,000. So a decent amount of money, you know, probably seed stage for most companies, like a seed raise. And then I funded it the following year as well. And then we raised, we raised $4.5 million, that we closed in, that we announced in January of 2018, but that we had pretty much closed in the end of October in 2017.
Mm-hmm. Awesome. And congrats on that. That's exciting.
Thank you.
But did you do 500 startups? Did I see that on the list?
Yeah. So we, our funding story is like a little interesting. I was anti-funding. Like I didn't want to raise. I wanted to like bootstrap it as long as I could. Mm-hmm. Even potentially never raise. Because, you know, my last two businesses, we used like debt and factoring and other things to like build. And then when we sold them, you know, I had owned a majority of the business, which worked out really well.
Yep.
The thing that changed my mind was when I think we saw the business and we saw marketing and other efforts that we were doing, and that the only thing that was holding us back was like, if we just spent more, like if we doubled down on marketing dollars, we'd quadruple clients. And, you know, if we could do some internal improvements, we could onboard them even faster than we were right now. So it was really like when the company was becoming the bottleneck to growth, and that was a resource issue, that's when we decided to raise. But when we raised, so I had told a lot of VCs, you know, we had a decent amount of interest come out early on, because there's some like some newspaper articles and stuff written up about what we were doing. And but we just told everyone, like, look, we're not interested in raising. We'll let you know.
Uh-huh.
We'll
good
let
strategy.
You know. Yeah. We're like, you know, not now. We'll let you know. We're fine. Probably not another year or two. But we still entertain and have the meetings at least. But just we were always the one telling them no versus them telling us, which I think worked out well. And then when it came time to raise, it was like the beginning of September. End of August, beginning of September of 2017, I met with a lot of people and just asked them, like, what's your recommendation? How do we do this? And pretty much everything told me, like, it has to be planned. Like, don't just start trying to raise money. Don't go and start talking to VCs like casually. Like, mm-hmm. it has to be one of those things that you go from zero to 100 like overnight. So we made up lists of VCs that we wanted to contact. We made up, I asked all of our board of advisors, everyone in my network, who do they know? Could you come up with a list of those people that you know? And then timed it where we said, don't make any intros until this day.
Mm-hmm.
And then the cool thing was like, or this week, you know, like, you know, could you introduce me this week? And so I reached out to maybe like 40 people. And then our advisors and like people that introduced us, they all made all those intros the same week. And some of them actually even knew the same VCs. And we're like, oh, well, if someone else is going to introduce you, or like, you already know them, like, I won't. And I was like, no. I want you to introduce me again. Because mm-hmm. I knew perception, right? If the same VC gets introduced to me by three other people and that they know and they trust, like, that's a company you're going to, you'll at least like want to take a peek at.
Yeah. It's got some momentum. Yeah.
Yeah. So we had that happening a lot. Simultaneously, like, what that meant was all of our VC meetings happened in a very condensed period of time. So the cool thing with us was we went from initial trying to raise to, you know, the first $4 million in our bank in less than 2 months.
Wow, that's fast.
Which is like super fast. Yeah. And a lot of that had to do with all the outreach went out immediately. That spawned people to be like, hey, people keep introducing me to this company. Like, who is this company? Do you know it? Now all the VCs are talking amongst each other. Everyone's talking about BotKeeper. That spread like coast to coast, just because like the VC circles and connections. And then that also meant that like when it came time to having those like intro meetings, they all happened. Like, I'd have like three or four VC meetings a day for yeah. that 2 months. Like, it was just nonstop back to back, nothing else that I was doing. And prior to like those first meetings, we like courted 406 Ventures and like Rob and Graham over there. And
well, say the name again.
406 Ventures.
406 Ventures. Gotcha. Yep.
And what we did was, I think, like, it was probably the greatest thing we could have done, which was we got vulnerable. Like, I went to them and I said, I've never raised before. I don't know what you want to see from me. I have no idea what metrics you care about. I don't know what numbers are good or bad. Like, what's the layout or the format of the presentation? Like, what do you want to know? What do you, like, you know, do you care how we sell to clients? Do you, like, all those things. And they just opened up and helped us out. I think because, like, I was just open and honest and I didn't pretend to know what I didn't know. And I think they appreciated that.
Were you pitching them, or were you kind of just going in for advice on how you should be pitching and stuff like that? Were you actually courting them or not so much?
So we were courting them in the sense that, like, I knew I had to be vulnerable with one VC at least, like, and open, you know, the kimono and not pretend to know more. And that would potentially, that could mean good or bad. Like, it would also mean a much longer courting process. It would, you know, potentially because of that length, they'd lose interest. We also didn't know 100% if we wanted to raise right then. Like, so this is like, say, the month prior to August. So August, like beginning of August. And they had interest in us. Like, they wanted, like, basically Rob was like, hey, like, can you put together a deck? We'd love to have you come in and do this. And I like pumped the brakes and was like, yeah, I'd be happy to do that, but like, I need your help. And he wasn't, I don't think, used to hearing that, but was happy to help, you know? And I think what ended up happening was over the course of a month or maybe a month and a half, they worked with me to like refine our presentation and the order and what they cared about. And then even like they made a bunch of intros because they wanted to say like, well, you know, let me talk to your clients and then let me introduce you to some of our portfolio companies to see what they think. And then their portfolio signed. Like, and they're like, this is great. And that meant that we got more clients and more revenue and the business is growing. And so the joke was, maybe we should never stop raising because it leads to
leads to sales.
Portfolio intros and sales.
That's awesome.
And, But a lot of I think the seed companies, they want to syndicate rounds. So that meant they put us in touch with a bunch of other firms, and then like the other firms would ask, give me feedback. And at the end of every presentation, I always would ask like questions like, you know, what would you have wished you saw, or, you know, what would make this a no-brainer to invest in, and, you know, or, you know, off the back of a napkin, like, what do you think the valuation could be? And, you know, you do that across like 10 people, and you can kind of start to hone in on what everyone thinks your valuation is. And then when you go and you tell people that that's what you think your valuation is, it's all more believable too, because you're going off of a bigger data set. And you can tell them that, like, I've heard from these other people that these are the ranges of the valuation. So then that, and then, you know, take that. Now, because we dragged the process out with them, we totally botched it. Like, there was a point in time where, I remember Rob being like, hey, there's a lot of interest here. If you can come in and pitch to the team, like, you know, I think I'd like to move forward quick. And I, you know, not knowing, like we didn't want to basically marry the first VC we talked to, was like, I'm going to go on vacation for 2 weeks and I'll get back to you. Some of the other partners had other deals that they wanted to do. And because it, you know, we basically had, like, I'd say two or three of the partners that wanted to do our deal, but the other two had, at that point, now had found other companies that they were interested in. So
that's interesting. So yeah, by slowing down the process with them going on vacation and whatnot, it lost a little momentum, would you say?
For sure. And like, what I didn't realize, and, you know, I know now, is every partner wants to do their deal because they get like some preferred investment terms on deals that they source and bring to the table. And it's also their deal. Like, maybe they don't get preferences, but it's their deal. And so if it goes well, they're the one that gets the credit and that sort of thing. And so even if there's a better company in the firm, partners would prefer to kind of go with their thing over the other. And if you catch them at a time where they don't have that other, they don't have their thing, then it becomes easier for them to, you know, kind of get on board with someone else's thing. And that was, I think, the timing, you know, early on. We dragged it out, and then they found other stuff that they were interested in, weren't, you know, so interested in Rob and Graham's deal.
Very interesting. Okay. So let's dig in a little more. Yeah, keep going.
Yeah, so answer your question. So we did that. We got vulnerable. Now we have this master deck. Like, we just knew this is the format and the numbers. And we just always ask every VC, like, what they wanted to see, and then tweak it. And the next one we would do would be better. Because we had all those meetings going simultaneously, a couple of things happened. One, I'd walk into a VC meeting maybe a few minutes late, and the excuse was I was coming from another meeting with a VC. Uh-huh. And that when that meeting ended, it had to end on time because I had another meeting with a VC after.
You would tell them that? You would say, sorry I'm late, I just came from a meeting. Would you name the other VC, or you just sit?
I'd name them because I wanted, like, I didn't want them to think like I was, you know, bullshitting. Oh, I just came from a meeting with, you know, Mass Ventures or with, you know, whoever. I'm sorry I'm running late. And then the thing was, like, you know, we'd schedule an hour and a half, and they would, like, expect that, like, as an entrepreneur, like, you'd stay as long as needed. And I'd be like, I got to go. I have a call with another VC. And they're like, which one? And they always want to know. And you tell them, and you're kind of creating competition, right? Like, it's now what you do, you take this idea of like, oh, well, let me look at this and go through our analysis and think about it on our timeline, to, wow, there's a lot of other people looking at it right now, and I have to, like, speed up my decision process.
Yep.
The nice thing about that too is you take variables off the table. Like, who knows if, like, the market crashes in 2 months and now my business does bad. But, like, if I was able to get the round closed prior, that's a make or break for, I think, a lot of companies. So we did a lot of really good stuff with timing. And then other things with, like, metrics and stuff. Like, we're an accounting company. So anytime someone asked us for data, we gave it to them immediately.
Yeah.
Just, I want this. Like, oh, tell me that number. I knew it off the top of my head down to, like, the penny. And I think that instills confidence in numbers and, like, the understanding of the business.
Yeah.
I made sure I never did a VC request something from me that I didn't turn around that same day, same night. Like, even if it was like at 10 p.m., they sent me something, they got it at 2 a.m. Like, that was just kind of the mantra I was living by.
Yeah. Are you willing to share any of your key metrics that you were holding out, you know, on that slide, key metrics slide? What did they look like at the time you were raising this Series A?
So they wanted to know churn rates. They wanted to know how many clients had churned, what the rate of churn was, how does revenue, like how much revenue are you churning or what percentage of your total revenue you churn? They wanted to know LTV and why we thought that that was the LTV. Like, so back it with some data that says that, like, you've only been in business for a year. Why do you think it's a 4-year LTV? They wanted to know LTV to CAC. So what was our cost of client acquisition? And when you're starting off, like, you don't have a lot of data points because, you know, we didn't spend a whole lot on ads and marketing. But what I could tell them was my total sales and marketing costs combined for the year were X. That generated this much in monthly recurring revenue for the year. And if I let that play out, kind of boil it down to like a smaller number, and it's like, okay, I'm getting a 2-to-1 LTV to CAC, which is a really good number in a raise. Yeah. And then other stuff was like, you know, how many clients are we bringing on month over month? What's the average size of our clients? How many clients per accountant does it take to support? What's the, you know, what are the margins in the first 3 months of the onboarding versus the over the course of a year, over the course of a life? So just, it was a lot of like those data points. And so knowing your numbers like in and out, I think is key.
Gotcha.
Timeline, how long does it take us to close a deal from start to finish? And I had literally the numbers and the days, and then not only was I able to tell them like in the meeting, but I would pull up, we were tracking everything. So it was like, here you go. Here's like, I didn't just come up with that out of the air. It's, you can see it was 8 yesterday. It's 10 today. We're averaging 8.7.
Cool. Great. Was it a pretty healthy growth story? I mean, at that point was, you know, when you were getting feedback on your metrics, we're like, hey, wow, we're impressed with your 350, 400 clients, whatever the number was, growing X percent. Like, was that a big part of the pitch at that point or not so much?
So growth was part of the pitch. Revenue retention. So we had a negative churn. Like, we retained 130% of our revenue because of upgrades and companies growth, that's offset churn. So that's also nice. We also have like a network effect where, because every client that brings us in, we pay out all their bills, all their vendors then interact with BotKeeper and learn about us. We also simultaneously, our competitors started reaching out to see if they could white label us, which is kind of a very, that says that you're doing something, you know, cool. And one of our biggest competitors that was on our slide reached out, and like, we kind of included that email in a slide that like, hey, this just happened. But then even like the growth, like, I think a lot of it is growth without the entrepreneur knowing why or how, or having to be in the plan, is, I think the VCs are more skeptical. You know, we did something that, like, you know, I would make predictions and say like, we're going to grow by this much over this period of time, and margins increased by this. Except they really weren't predictions. Like, to the VCs and everyone, it sounded like I was forecasting or predicting what I think. But I was doing it based on, I had enough data, and I knew that like, we had client upgrades that were going to be going on soon that hadn't hit. So like, that was going to lead. I knew we had all these other clients that were onboarding that hadn't hit our books yet. Like, I knew we're rolling out this new reworking of like our process and software that was going to lead to more margins. And so what you kind of do is like, I would show some of those cards, but not all of them. And then like, it's kind of like, you know, when you flip over a hand and it's four kings, it's, and you predicted that you were going to win, you know, you went all in, people think that like, that's a lot of skill. Like, if you've been holding four kings the whole time, like, it's not so much, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, it's awesome. That's great.
So I would say these numbers, and then the next meeting, because we'd lined them all up in, so quickly. It was like, you know, the beginning of the month, I told them at the end of the month, numbers are going to be like this, or that in 2 months it was going to be like this. And the next meeting we had, they matched perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
And that meant that, like, I'm matching an upward trajectory perfectly. Like, well, then it's going to continue matching. And you kind of instill that confidence.
So, all right, I want to get back to the actual process. You had about 40 or so investors on your target list. You got vulnerable with 406.
Yeah.
But then, you know, you're having three or four meetings a day. 406 didn't end up leading the round. So kind of take us through what happened after that. Yeah, the next part.
Yeah, so 406 made a bunch of intros. Those intros to other VCs would then test us on their portfolio to see if it works and does. And that meant more clients and more revenue and more growth, which
that's
helped
fuel
our numbers. And that also meant that, like, more VCs knew companies that were using us. And there was, like, you know, added the confidence factor. And along the way, one of those intros was to Correlation Ventures. They're a machine learning VC fund, kind of. They use an algorithm with a bunch of data points that you provide them, and in a week they make a decision. So, like, and that's it. Like, no other meeting. Like, one meeting, give me 10 data points, decision in 7 days.
Yeah. Smart.
And they really loved our business. Like, this makes total sense. We love it, but we don't lead, we follow. Let me introduce you guys at Ignition. I know this guy Kellen over there, he's really great. And now Ignition's in Seattle. So, like, we can kind of, we're leapfrogging to the West Coast without doing any outreach on the West Coast. And simultaneously, we had other firms reaching out to us on the West Coast too, just because that network kind of effect. And we just, you know, we showed Kellen and Ignition what we were doing, and they just thought it was, like, they thought it was brilliant, and they loved the business model, and they loved how scrappy we were, and that, you know, we had been able to build a business off of not a lot of, like, upfront costs. Like, they put millions in the companies that hadn't gotten as far as we did on, you know, a few hundred grand, or seen other companies that had millions that didn't. And I think John Connors there kind of, like, could relate to me, like, just being, like, a hardworking, you know, scrappy guy. Like, our whole team, Scrappy describes us.
Scrappy. Just, I like that. I love Scrappy. Yeah. Uh-huh.
We just hustle. And then he's, you know, it helped that he was the former CFO of Microsoft. So when he looked at our business and what we were doing in finance and accounting, it made total sense. Like, he's like, I get it. And I can see what you're doing, and I can see the result, and it lines up. And then the other things that they had there too is, like, Bill, Nick, was on the board of Bill.com, I think, before, a big accounting platform. New people, and knew Renee, who was the CEO, and knew other people in the space. And, like, so he got our space. And essentially what it came down to is we moved through all those meetings so quickly and condensed. Like, we were quickly, okay, let's jump into the next meeting. Let's do your whole investor team, you know, the final presentation, have my team come in and meet with you. And so very quickly we had term sheets, like a few terms from, we had verbal offers, we had like actual terms from other firms. And now we're able to, like, go and say, like, hey, yeah, we've got these terms, and we're not going after, I think also, like, the more, I don't, I think I'm, like, a real person, right? So when they talk to me, I was like, I don't want the biggest valuation. We've got bigger valuations than what you guys are saying. I don't want to have to take a down round. Like, that could kill us. And,
yeah.
You know, I don't need to be greedy. And just, I think the way, like, I thought of, like, investment and, like, future rounds, it was not, I would show them numbers that were numbers. Like, these were real actual numbers and projections. There was no, I'm not showing you a chart that says we're going to go 10X this year so that you guys think that there's a market. I would show them numbers. I would show them small gross margins. I would add more stuff to my COGS than I needed to, but because I actually understood that there's variances there and I wanted to track it that way. So when they looked at everything we did, they looked at it as, like, here's a business that if you could keep, you would fund it and put your own money into it, and you already have, and it's a perfectly great business, and we're just going to boost the marketing and growth versus, like, me trying to sell a dream.
Yeah.
So ultimately, a few terms, and we went with Ignition, just because, like, out of the gate, I mean, Kellen flew from Seattle to Boston to meet with us, like,
wow,
our second meeting. And I was just like, holy crap, the VCs are coming to us. That's really cool. And we wanted more than money. Like, I felt like we could get money from banks, we could get money from other people. And so just Ignition brought a lot more. Like, they brought industry insight, they brought, you know, having invested in a bunch of SaaS, you know, kind of like software and service plays. And they ultimately brought, you know, we've got Doug Sleater now is on our board. He's like a Hall of Famer in the accounting space, like, you know, the guy, in accounting. And that was a action, you know, that they brought us. So,
but they weren't on your initial list. How did you miss them on your initial target list building? Or, I mean,
they're in Seattle. So, I mean, our target list building was predominantly based on firms and people that we knew here in Boston. Like, it's easiest to reach out to, you know, people in circles or firms that I knew, other friends of mine had raised money from and that they liked. You know, a lot of the firms that we reached out to, we didn't reach out to anyone based on how they presented themselves on paper, like somewhere, pitch book or whatever. We reached out to people who, you know, I asked all the entrepreneurs I knew who had raised money, like, who have you worked with? Who did you raise money from? Who do you like? Who don't you like? And it's crazy the stories you get. Like, I can't name any VC names, but there were certain VC firms that I was like, I'll never work with them because, you know, they, four or five entrepreneurs told me four or five different stories of them coming in, putting money, forcing the company to use all their vendors, forcing people and consultants into the equation, and then ousting the founders. And I was like, that's not the kind of company.
Interesting.
And John, and like, I you know, I talked to a lot of the portfolio companies of these investors, and, you know, Ignition portfolio, like, everyone spoke like as high, like, I didn't talk to a single person, whether it was an old portfolio company or a new one, that didn't rave about them and say that they're not, they treated it as a partnership, and they care more about the entrepreneur. And they told us, they're like, you take our money and you don't raise another round in 10 years, we're fine, like, with that. Like, we think this is a good investment, and, you know, we think you'll be worth more in 3, 5, 10 years than you are today. And we're not going to push you guys to hit, like, they want us to hit growth, but not, you know, I don't have that pressure. I think a lot of people have pressure. I set my own pressure. And
yeah. Well, a lot of VCs do put on the pressure to quickly groom you for the next round and the next round. But you are in a space like Zero. I was looking, they've raised $65 million in their last round. I mean, you are in a space that is fairly well funded. So I guess, do you not feel that your own pressure to raise a lot, or how do you think about that?
I mean, I look at like QuickBooks and Xero, and I think that they're maybe in like a different category, right? Like, you're trying to compete as like the accounting platform, like, or the general ledger tool. And so you need a lot of money to like distribute a $30 a month. In order to make a lot of money on a $30 a month tool, you get in a lot of hands. And there's like a lot of product there that needs to be developed. I think our space, you know, if you look at our space, like the outsourced accounting firms in our space, which are like the closest to us because that's the business process that we replace, that doesn't get funded as well. And it started to a little bit more. Like, I think, you know, what helped us was, you know, like UiPath recently, they're a robotic process automation firm. They might do a little accounting, but they do like big enterprise robotic process automation. They just raised like $120 million on a $1 billion valuation.
Wow.
Receipt Bank, you know, which automates like scanning of receipts and data extraction, I think raised $50 million. So we did, and that all, I think that started happening roughly around the same time. But then there was like firms like, you know, Indinero and Bench who had raised a lot of money, and like, you know, they're 10 years later, they're still, you know, doing great, but like, you know, they're not $1 billion, you know, valuations around. So
yeah,
I felt kind of pressure on our round and valuation and raise actually from both ends, you know, like, are the VCs going to look at that and say, this isn't a space that you put money into, or money's been put in there and, you know, it's, it hasn't become an Uber. Like, it's,
yeah, it's like, interesting.
Then acquisitions in the outsourced accounting space. Like, you can't look at, you know, like Indonero was like kind of leading the path with Bench, and neither of them have had the yet. So, you, you know, it's kind of TBD on how that plays out.
Do you kind of try and tailor that story? Like, when you're talking to VCs, you're kind of lumping yourself in more with a receipt bank versus a Bench. Are you controlling that story at all, do you think? Or I don't know.
So I think this goes back to like what I was talking about. Like, I'm just the like super realist that so when we did our, like, we grabbed a bunch of data from PitchBook and were able to then get like valuations and rounds and stuff and be able to say like, hey, like, company X raised this much money. Like, they had this many clients, you know, here they are today. It took them this many years to get this many clients and they're now at this valuation. You know, we did that in 2 years and it took them 8. We use that sort of thing, like, where, like, I don't want to use the names there, but
yeah,
we were able to very quickly like look at the market and say, hey, here's who compares to us. Here's how much they've raised. Here's where their clients are at now. Here's their revenue, LTV to CAC, like other stuff. Because a lot of, like, surprisingly, there's a lot of public data out there that people don't realize. And use that as like the benchmarks, and then showed how we compare. And that was how we did. And then, you know, they'd be like, well, I'd be like, look, like, other companies in our space have raised a lot of money, but like Receipt Bank, that's one piece of the equation and that's not us. So yeah, they raised 50 million, but I don't know. I don't know how that data point holds.
Okay. All right. I won't keep you too much longer. This is really great stuff. You know, just to finish out that, you had a couple term sheets, you're really getting a good vibe with Ignition, talking to a bunch of portfolio company founders, and then, you know, just conclude it. So did you try and build a syndicate with a couple VCs, or did you just, like, go with Ignition and thank the 406 guys and others for their help along the way?
So we told like everyone that, like, look, we want to go with this strategic money, and Ignition felt very strong about around, you know, they wanted to do the whole thing. Like, and we decided, you know, I felt there were other people who would wanted to invest in smaller capacities or in larger capacities that I had said, yes, I'll save some room for you. And so kind of back to like, I'm a man of my word. If I say I'm going to do something, I do it. And I think that was kind of like, once again, this is what all the VCs saw, was that when it came time to the round, I'm like, look, I want to add another $500,000 to the round. That's why we did 4.5. It's a weird number.
I see.
Add $500,000 to the round. Yeah, I'll eat that in, you know, what I give up in equity. But like, I feel it's only right because I promised Trevor, from Correlation, he ended up just investing in by himself. I promised Matt from 500 Startups that he could get in. I promised, you know, another dozen people that they could get in. And we basically took 500 and cut it a bunch of ways, and then they came in smaller chunks.
That's cool. Yeah, that's good. Good stuff.
It works for us too. Like, you know, the other side of the equation was, you know, this is how we also sold it to Ignition, was, well, if we let another 10 VCs get in on our round, that's 10 VCs with 10 portfolios that we can sell into as well. And
yeah, customers. I like that. That's a little known sales hack. Just be pitching portfolios or pitching VCs in their portfolio companies. That's good. Never heard that one. I love it. Cool. Any, you know, just final thoughts or anything you would do differently, give yourself advice, you know, if you're starting this all over again, or just giving advice to founders who are thinking about raising now, any other nuggets to share?
I mean, it was like the way I did it, it's really stressful. Like, you're kind of, the way I did it was, it's a hit or miss. You're lining everything up so quickly, so fast, you're gaining momentum and traction, and either you get it and you walk away with it, term sheet, and, you know, get it all signed.
Yeah.
Or if you don't, to like start over again is like going to be tough. Like, because I put everything on the back burner. Like, I still have like probably 1,200 emails that from that period of time of raise, just no one got responded to.
Right. Wow. That's amazing. Yeah.
So it was, you know, you kind of, you're going for gold. I think you increase the probability of closing a round if you do it like that. But, you know, when you do that, you're sacrificing other things in the business in a big way. Like, you're not like sacrificing like slightly or kind of like working double. You're truly, everything hinges. And then, you know, if you're hitting growth and you've worked, like I said, you've used real numbers and numbers that you're not predicting, but that you know, you can't do that forever. So, like, I knew I had the 2 or 3 months that I knew what was going to happen, and I could show it. And after that, I didn't. And that didn't could be revenue declining, a big client, we lose a big client. Like, so, yeah, I don't know. I would say, plan as much as you can, get in front of as many VCs in as short period of time as you can, and do it in a predictive plan way on your revenue. Like, if you know you got some big clients, like, that's when you want to go out. Mm-hmm. Because the less variables you can, the more variables you can take off the table, the more likely you will be able to close a round, because they want to invest in something that seems tried and true and no risk.
And they're all startups, so it's like you sort of have to manufacture that tried and true. Yeah.
Exactly. Right. Yeah, sure.
Awesome.
And we had to kind of do that. But it's not like we didn't manipulate or lie about anything. Yeah. It's like we knew things were lining up, and that was when I said, now is the time to raise.
I love it. This is great. This is just, I've got like 2 pages of full, you know, notes here and tidbits and nuggets. This is awesome. Awesome. Well, Enrico, thank you so much for your time. This has been fantastic, and continued success to BotKeeper. I love it. Love the story.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. It's great being on Founder Suite.
Awesome. Thank you. Adios.
Okay. Bye-bye.